Welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast, where sales leaders teach you what's working for them and how you can build it yourself.
This episode of the Predictable Revenue Podcast is brought to you by our sales coaching and consulting services. Are you looking to create repeatable, scalable, and predictable revenue? We've helped thousands of companies grow their business with tailored expert advice backed by testing to ensure they establish the best practices that'll work for them. Head over to bit.ly/predictable revenue coaching to learn more. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Predictable Revenue Podcast. This week, we're going to be talking about sequences and cadences. I think a lot of us know at this point that we're supposed to be using sequences or cadences, whichever you call them, but we're not sure exactly how we're supposed to do that. There's a lot of conflicting information out there. It's coming from sales leaders at your company or externally, content creators. A lot of the SaaS businesses that are in the sales space are always putting out this type of content, but it's not often that we actually get to learn how to create strong sequences from somebody who actually has the data to back up their claims. I'm your host, Sarah Hicks, and today on the Predictable Revenue Podcast, I'm going to be chatting with an expert about outbound sales sequences and cadences, best practices, and common mistakes. He's the Chief Revenue Officer at VanillaSoft, the industry's most established sales engagement platform. He's a funny, high-energy, in-demand event host and panel moderator, an accomplished award-winning marketer, a Sales World Top 50 keynote speaker, and a multi-time gold medalist content creator, a top 10 SaaS branding expert, a top 19 B2B marketer to watch, voted the top 3 marketer and top 30 sales leader by all of LinkedIn. He's a social media influencer. He's a category-leading podcaster. He's a serial entrepreneur. And he's raised almost $100 million in venture capital, acquired, merged, and taken companies public, been hired and fired, and worked with companies of all sizes. And that's why we've got him on the show, because he knows it all. Daryl Prale, welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast.
Wow. I don't know if I need to comment on how obnoxious that introduction sounds or how amazing you did with the introduction. You nailed that. I'm so impressed with you. That was awesome. Well done.
Thank you. Thank you. And thank you for joining us on the show. Let's dive right into this idea of sequences and cadences. Why should we even bother with cadences versus just going kind of traditional manual tasks?
Oh, that's a great question. And, you know, if you're like 25 or younger, you've probably never known a world without cadences. And by the way, if you heard the way I said out there, yes, I am Canadian. So there we go. Let me get an out and about in there. Sorry. Where do we start with this one? We have bad habits, Sarah. As sales reps, we have bad habits, and that's okay, because the first step to recovery is admitting you have a problem. So what are some of the bad habits? Because the bad habits, to address the bad habits, is why we have cadences. So it's kind of a cause and effect. Let me explain the bad habits. The bad habits are this, and if you're a marketer listening as well to this, you're going to go, yes, preach it, Daryl. Okay, so the bad habit is marketing's gone and spent a lot of money and they've made you a lead and it's hot and they give it to you and you go, thank you. And then 48% of the time, you never, ever call that lead. And if you do, often you'll take on average, it's either 36 to 63 hours, depending on your study, you want to believe, to follow up on. Okay, so that's a bad habit. Why? Why? Because you should follow up on every lead, because that's a real lead. Money's been spent. The marketers need to show a return on that spend. B, if you call up within the hour, or you reach out within the hour, your chances of actually connecting triple. But if you wait more than 4 hours, it drops like a rock, and beyond 8 hours, don't even bother. So those are the bad habits, number one. Bad habits number two is we tend to make 2 or 3 attempts to engage, and then we give up. But statistically, depending on your study, you need to do 9 to 12 touches before somebody finally goes, oh, did you want to talk to me? Okay, sure, I'll talk to you. Beyond that, they've just tuned you out, all right? So 2 to 3 versus 9 to 12, that's a 3 to 4x difference in effort. Next, when we make those 2 to 3 attempts, they'll span weeks, because we'll make an attempt manually, and then we will physically, you know, we may or may not schedule it. And then when it comes up, we're like, yeah, I called them last week. They suck. I'm going to skip this one and call them next week. So again, it's so old. You finally do reach out to them. They don't know who you are, and it's dead in the water. Finally, last bad habit we're all guilty of is cherry picking. So we're working on lists, maybe HubSpot, maybe Salesforce, maybe a spreadsheet. And you got this list of hot leads you got to follow up on. And what you do is you kind of go, no, no, no. Oh, Microsoft, they've got lots of money. I'm going to call them. And so you're cherry picking the leads, which means everybody you just said no, no, no to. That's why you're only making 2 to 3 attempts, or 48% never get called in the first place. Get those kids with the deals. All right. Those are the bad habits. I've set the stage. There's more, but those are common. So what sequences or cadences do simply is they force you as a rep to follow up on a lead instantly. As soon as it's in the system, it should be routed to you. Now, maybe you get to it within an hour or 3 or 4 hours, but it's not days. The second thing it's going to do, it's going to force you to make those 9 to 12, give or take, attempts to engage instead of the 2 to 3. Mm-hmm. The next thing it's going to do is it's going to serve every lead to you so you can't cherry pick and skip leads. The next thing it's going to do is it's going to eliminate a lot of the admin of actually scheduling follow-up tasks, because it's just auto-schedules. And the last thing it does, and I didn't talk about this on the bad habits, but it is a bad habit. A bad habit is we tend to default to the channel of engagement that we ourselves are most comfortable with. So maybe that's email if you're younger. Maybe that's phone if you're older. I'm totally stereotyping. So a cadence is going to say, no, no, no. You're going to do an email, then you're going to do a text, then you're going to do a video, and then you're going to do a phone call, and you're going to do a postcard, and you're going to, you know, rinse and repeat. So because you just don't know how that prospect is, what they're going to react to. You call me, I probably won't respond. Email me, 50-50. Send me a LinkedIn message, you've got my attention if it's good. That's me. That's not my boss. So that's why you need sales engagement to overcome those bad habits so you get a higher ROI in your marketing spend. And you as a sales rep can double or triple your pipeline. And your sales management will love that, because if they can double or triple their pipeline without any additional investment in staff, that's a good thing. So that's a long-winded answer, but there you go.
No, that's great. We've really set the scene here for understanding why we need to bother with cadences in the first place. They're important. We understand the bad habits that they reduce. Now we need to figure out how to actually build them from scratch. So we've got to start off all the way back before we actually start building out that sequence, writing the messaging, whatever. We've got to think about who we're actually sending this cadence or this sequence to. So tell me, Daryl, how you'd walk through that process of understanding your target audience so that you can go ahead and build the best cadence possible.
All right. So I love that you're talking about before we do anything, because too many people just want to jump in and write the emails, right? And I see it over and over again. I see all the cycles being spent on, you know, what's the emails? What's the script? What do we do? What do you think? Let's bounce this back and forth. Let's have a shared Google Doc before we go. Let's hire it out. And then there's a whole another kettle of fish we could get into. The sales on it, does marketing on it, or somebody else? Anyway, you have to know who you're talking to. Who is my ideal customer profile? And then who is the persona within? So this is what marketers do every single day. And sales reps have only started to tune into this in the last couple of years, which is, if my ideal customer profile is somebody maybe in high tech, I'll use VanillaSoft. I'll use, for simplicity, VanillaSoft's ideal customer profile would be somebody who would be in what we call real world industries. That would be insurance or finance or manufacturing, or a services industry, or maybe a fundraising vertical like higher education. SMBs typically, so maybe less than 25 sales reps or fundraisers. That would be that's my ideal customer profile. So if someone comes to me from technology, I'm not gonna want to pursue that, because that doesn't fit my sweet spot where my product is, as an example. But the next part is, you have to understand, as an ICP, what do those people face? And they face some shared challenges. So for example, if you're SMB, like mine is, they don't have the same resources of an enterprise company because they have different budgets, all that kind of stuff. Also, part of that could be language. You know, in from VanillaSoft's case, we tend to focus on North America. So if someone came from Japan, I'm not going to want to engage with them, right? So right away, you need to know who you're talking to. The next part is the personas. In other words, think about the buying committee. That's the best way to put it. What's your buying committee when you're selling? You know, again, if it's VanillaSoft selling a sales engagement platform, I want probably a head of revenue operations, head of marketing, head of sales. I might want an actual rank and file, an actual, you know, sales rep, And I probably want like an executive C-level officer, maybe the CEO or the CEO or the CFO. And that's kind of five people right there. That's probably my buying committee. And then I can, you know, land and expand from there. So the combination of the persona with the ideal customer profile tells me the messaging I'm going to use. With a marketing person, I'm going to say things like, are you tired of sales wasting the leads that you've made for them? I'm never going to say that to a sales rep. They'll get indignant. All right. To a CFO, I'm going to say, would you like to double or triple your pipeline with no additional investment in staff or resources? Absolutely, they're going to want to do that. So you get the idea, is that you're actually tiring the message to your people you want to engage, because that's what's going to drive the messaging you use in your emails, in your SMSs, in your phone call scripts, in your social touches, et cetera. Because too many of you are speaking features and functions. Nobody cares about your features and functions. You want to make it relevant and real and speak to their pains. You've heard it all before. I won't get into the nitty gritty. There's another show for that. But stop with the features and functions. Your cadence needs to speak to them and their role and what keeps them up at night. So for example, if someone were to look at me, they would maybe send me, maybe one of their touches would be, hey, Daryl, I see a lot of openings. I see you just raised some money. I bet you you've got a bigger number to hit. Do you have a plan? No features and functions, but that's relevant. Now, of course, the plan might be, well, what if I could double or triple your pipeline? Let me talk to you about VanillaSoft. You know, you get the idea where I'm going with that down the road. But that's the messaging you want to do. So you're right. You nailed it, Sarah. You got to know the ICP. You got to know the persona so you could actually have messaging that's going to convert. Because what's the point of doing the cadence if it never converts?
Yeah, absolutely. All great points. Yeah. It's something that I think it's another one of these pieces where people kind of understand, maybe conceptually, it's kind of dancing along the periphery of their mind, but they don't know how to actually go ahead and create the messaging that is then persona relevant within the verticals or segments or whatever. So you put it in, yeah, you put it in a nice fine point on it there. Who cares about your product? Who cares about how exactly you can help them get there? Who cares about the features? What do they care about? What do they care about doing? That's it. Those are the things that you want to say in that messaging, and keep it short and sweet.
Oh my gosh. Short and sweet. We can have a whole episode on short and sweet. So let's talk a bit about the short and sweet, if that's okay with you. This gets into the cadence design, but let's talk about email. We'll use email because email is the prominent channel. Short and sweet. Okay. Let's start with in sales as a whole, let's table sales engagement or cadences or sequences. Sales as a whole, what's the purpose of a meeting? Okay, it's a trick question, Sarah, to see if you know the answer. I'm going to throw you on the bus. And if you don't know the answer, you can edit it out afterwards. What's the purpose of any meeting?
To have a conversation.
You're right. You're spot on. The purpose of any meeting is to have another meeting.
Right.
That's always the purpose, right? So too many people are trying to do too much with your messaging. Short and sweet. You don't need to do War and Peace. I literally got a LinkedIn message the other day. I counted it. It was 1,000 words. And he's like, and then he sends me a bump message. Just bumping this. What did you think? And I said, I stopped reading after the first paragraph. Oh my gosh, I hate that. Yeah, I'm getting some bad practices afterwards. Okay, so an email, there's a lot of formulas out there. You can pick whatever you want to. Here's my advice to you. Don't follow the templates per se. Like, for example, a template might be where you put RE on the subject line because it looks like, oh, we've already had a conversation and this is a response. That's just bullshit. People look at that and they immediately discount you. Yes, I have white hair, but I'm not so old that I know I've never talked to you before and you've instantly lost your credibility with me and I'll never, ever, ever talk to you again. And chances are, I'm going to go look in your profile, look at your company and say, no matter who comes for me, they're morons. I'm not doing this. So that's the first part. Right? So there's lots of templates out there. That's an example. When it comes to email templates, you can follow BAP, you can follow ADA, you can follow TTTT. There's lots of different formulas. They're designed to do a couple of things. They're designed to keep it short and they're designed to entice them enough to simply get them to respond because the purpose of this touch is to have another conversation. Mm-hmm. So I'm a big fan of TTTT. That's a Josh Braun thing. The first one I'm down to this top of mind now. The TTT kind of says the first word, your first one-liner, paragraph number one, one-liner, short-liner, it's a trigger. Mm-hmm. Daryl, are you struggling hitting your numbers these days? Oh, okay, you've triggered me. The next one is going to be third party. I know when I talk to company A, B, and C, they needed to increase their deal flow by 50% when we started our engagement. A, B, and C, third party recommendations. So now they're valid. Then you want to tell me, we do this for our companies. Then you want to teach me, I can show you how, just let me know, mm-hmm. right? Or read this piece of content. But notice nowhere along the way there to say, do you have 10 minutes on your calendar tomorrow? Because no executive has 10 minutes for you. And if they do, they won't be an executive long. So that's the whole point. That was four sentences. It fits on my phone without scrolling. If I do scroll, I can scroll once and that's it. Short, sweet, tight. All the formulas follow that exact same, you know, BAP, three lines, ADA, four lines. That's mm-hmm. what you need to be doing. Tighten, stop with the warm piece. If you do that, I will look at it. And I will likely respond yay or nay, because I do want to be polite. I do want to recognize you. I'm not an idiot. I've got a sales team working for me and I want them to get responses. So I'm going to show you that same courtesy. Just make it easy for me to give you a yes or no answer.
Yeah, absolutely. All great points. So that's when we're thinking about the messaging and how we're actually translating that ideal customer profile, those buyer personas, all the things they care about into the actual words on the email. You're talking about kind of aligning with the way that, you know, customers buy and the fact that we've got to give ourselves every opportunity to kind of get each person where they like to receive content. So we're incorporating those different channels into our approach. How do you design the kind of optimal sequence with all of the different channels in mind?
Okay, so that's fantastic. So answer number one, there is no perfect answer. I want you to know that right away, okay? So again, what have marketers been doing for years that sales reps are only now figuring out, which is they've been doing A-B testing. So every single sales rep out there, you're now a marketer, start A-B testing. And it's really simple. It's really simple. You're simply saying, I've got cadence A, I've got cadence B. They're the same cadence, targeting the same ICP and the same persona, but I'm going to do half my calls or half my touches on cadence A, half my touches on cadence B. Or you could do, for this week, I'm doing cadence A. For next week, I'm doing cadence B. You can figure it out. But at a certain time frame, you're going to say, which one performed better? And then you could even get granular, is that which touches, emails, phones, SMSs, are performing better. So you need to test and iterate. That's the first thing I will tell you that. 90% of people listening to this are nodding their head yes, and they will never do it. All right? They will never ever do it. And guys and gals, you're stupid because you're leaving money on the table. Just let you know, it's free money to be had. Okay, what's the right mix? So the right mix is, who knows? I mean, typically we know that it's 9 to 12 touches. So you can experiment. You can go from, say, 6 to 15 touches. So you could do a 6, you could do a 9, you could do a 12, and you could do a 15. I give you 4, and you can start with the 6 versus the 9, then the 12 versus the 15, and then you can have, it's like a bracket, and work it out. It's up to you. But the point is, you do want to mix it up because you don't know which way your ICP or your personas are biased. Now, you can make some educated guesses. If I'm selling to somebody who's maybe under the age of 30, I'm going to have probably a 3-to-1 ratio of emails or social touches versus phone calls. But if I'm selling to somebody who's likely on average 40 or older, then it might be a 2-to-1 ratio of emails and social touches to phone calls. All right. So that's, yeah, you have to understand the propensity of the person who you're trying to engage, what their default stereotypical engagement style is. Now, just because maybe you're calling somebody who's 30 years old and you're saying to yourself, they'll never use the phone. That's fine. They may never use the phone. I got news for you. They may never, or you may be projecting your own biases. So you need to remove yourself here. You may never answer the phone. Doesn't mean they won't answer the phone. All right. Next thing to consider is that if you're like me, every time somebody calls my line, whether it's on my cell phone or my office line, I get a little email sent to me that transcribes it and says, Hey, Daryl, it's Sarah Hicks here from Predictable Revenue. Just want to drop you a line and say, I love your beard, whatever it might be, right? So I still get that touch and that message, even though we didn't connect on the phone. Don't forget that. The other part is, it says on my phone, 3 missed messages. Who was it? Oh, I recognize that number. So yeah, Sarah reached out to me again. It's a touch point. It's a branding. It's another touch. So sometimes your touches are intentionally not designed necessarily to actually convert. They're designed to influence so that ultimately they convert. But in the end of the day, if I had 12 touches, I'd probably send 6 emails, 3 phone calls, and 3 social touches. Now, if you want to, you can mix in there an SMS, but usually that's more, you know, middle of the funnel. You've already got an established rapport. That's where I would start. But that's what you want to do. A-B test it, making sure you're following your messaging, following your target, you know, personas. You know what they want. You're not doing cliche templates. You're keeping it short, tight, and sweet, and consistent. You're making it relevant to the consumer. And then you're going to do an A-B test. I didn't give you an answer, but I give you a method.
Yeah, exactly. It's a framework that lets people figure out exactly what might work for them over the course of the kind of iterative process. And just back to your point about the kind of the template that everybody does, or that's like a bait and switch or whatever, anything that you see, that's why I kind of mentioned in the intro, we're bombarded with conflicting information from sales influencers, from, you know, blogs, all that kind of stuff. And often everybody will hop on one trend, and then that trend will lose its effectiveness. Like, somebody's figured it out and it's gotten a crazy open rate and response rate, and that's fantastic. They share it, everybody tries it. All of a sudden, everybody getting prospected in the same space is like, oh, I've seen this email 1,000 times. No, thanks. And it'll lose its momentum. So it's never a great idea to just have these templates and say, like, I'm just going to stick with this one thing. You always want to stick with like the framework. What do people care about? How can I write something really enticing? And go with that instead. So I appreciate that you give a framework and not, here's the template for the perfect sequence. Here's the template for the perfect messaging. Cause it simply does not work like that in outbound whatsoever. Yeah.
One of the things I want to bring, and I don't know, maybe this is on your agenda, so if it's not and you need to move on, just yell at me. I want to talk a little bit about what we buyers do when you've sent us a really solid message. We have some cliche behaviors that you need to understand, because if you don't optimize for this, you're going to get shot down. But if you do optimize for this, you're going to have a home run. Oh my gosh, I'm using sports metaphors. I apologize, Sarah. So here we go. If we liked what you had to say, we immediately do 2 things. First thing we do, I know you know this, but I'm going to say it anyway. As I go, who is this Sarah woman who just sent me in a compelling email? She's intriguing me. She triggered me. And I liked her third party, you know, affirmations. So I'm going to go check her out on LinkedIn. And when I go to LinkedIn, what I'm looking to see is, do I think, you know, Sarah impressed me with that message. Do I think she might actually have the credentials, the experience, the network connections, the solution to help me out? How credible is Sarah? Now, Sarah doesn't need to be a rock star influencer. I want to make sure that's really, really clear. So I look at Sarah's tenure. I look at Sarah's posts. I'm looking to see if all Sarah does is go like, reshare without a comment, reshare without a comment, reshare without a comment, like. And when I see all those, then I go to see how many connections does Sarah have? Because now I'm suspicious that Sarah's just a fabrication. She's a bot. Oh, look, she's got, you know, 25 connections or 100 connections. Yeah, I don't think Sarah's real. I'm moving on. Mm-hmm. All right. So I'm looking to see if Sarah's got actual content, has an opinion, whether I agree or disagree. If she has an opinion, I respect Sarah. That's what I want. She can think. She's a critical thinker. So, and if Sarah passes that test, and I also look to see who do I have in common. So the networks and the how many, who do I have in common is me saying, is Sarah part of my tribe? Does she know people I know? Because if she does, then she's probably good people, and I'm going to give Sarah the time of day. If Sarah's not part of my tribe, or I suspect Sarah's a bot, then I'm not responding. All right. And do I trust Sarah? And if I trust her, if she passes that test, then I'm going to check out your company webpage. So I spent $10, $9.99, 4 years ago. It's still the same price. On Amazon, I bought a book called How to Write a Killer LinkedIn Profile. I spent a couple hours over Christmas holidays and I revamped my profile. That's all I ever freaking did, right there, full stop. Didn't spend a lot of money. I invested in myself. I still to this day have people saying, yours is like the best profile we've ever seen. It's so credible. And I spent 10 bucks. If I can spend 10 bucks and spend it in my time, you guys can too. Eliminate that excuse. That's what we call an objection. And your job as sales pros is to objection handling. Second part there is make sure that your website is using the same messaging that your cadences are using. If there's a disconnect, I'm confused, I don't trust you, I bop. So that's what you need to know. If you pass all those tests, we're gonna have another meeting, because that was the whole purpose of the engagement in the first place.
Yeah, absolutely. Great points. And we actually did a whole webinar series with Cynthia Barnes, who's a great leader in the sales space. Yeah, she's fantastic. And she walked us through how exactly what all the little bits are of your LinkedIn profile that you need to go make adjustments to in order for it to act like business development, not like a job seeker's profile. So if you like to read, we'll put in the show notes the book that Daryl found. If you like to watch webinars, I'll put in the show notes the Cynthia Barnes series on the LinkedIn stuff, because it's a great point. A lot of the time, our LinkedIn is just not working for us when it absolutely should be. And then, of course, aligning the messaging across all channels when we're talking about the company website to the messaging is another huge thing you need to do. And you can think about that even with your, you know, case studies, testimonials, white papers. What of that can you borrow and pull into your messaging, like your ABC company was dealing with this before they worked with us. Now they're dealing with that, like the third party little section of the email that Daryl was mentioning.
And the content thing, before you jump, then yes. I want to build. Sarah made a brilliant comment with the content piece, because you've got great content. I will guess that, again, 90% of you have no idea of the content in your company's website. Okay, you want to go look at the content. There's great content there. Trust me, just spend an hour, get to know it. Here's what the kicker is. You don't need to include content with those touches. You can actually be a little more provocative. You can say, we've got a great paper that we just wrote with Cynthia Barnes. And she talks about A, B, and C on how to make your LinkedIn rock. If you want a copy, just let me know. I'll send it to you. You see the difference? I didn't just give it to them. If they want it, they got to reply to me. Same outcome. I'm still sharing that content, but they got to engage, which is the whole point of that. Starts a conversation.
Absolutely. Great, great point. And while we're on the great points train, because we've kind of walked our way through how you start from the beginning with the ideal customer, the buyers, all that kind of stuff. You do the messaging, you do the sequence design, you incorporate all the different channels. You've got your LinkedIn covered and the website covered. There's some other little bits that I'm sure our listeners are looking for a little tips and tricks on. So tell me what your thoughts are around crafting a great subject line.
Oh, okay. Great subject line. Okay. So I'm sorry. I have lots of opinions. You're making me laugh already. And it's in my head, kids. I'm sorry. So the great subject line, statistically, you want 5 words or less. 1, 2, 3 words work best. The whole idea, though, is you want to make it stand out and be unique. I hate to say this, but again, the marketers are doing it right when they had clickbait. You don't want to be clickbaity per se, but you want to say, Sarah, check out Cynthia. All right. I don't know what the hell that means, but I'm going to check out Cynthia. Of course, that's the message where Afani says, hey, by the way, if you want this content from Cynthia, it's great stuff. You know, so there's an example where it's provocative enough that make me to do it. The reason I was laughing was because I was working with one of my reps the other day about doing, remember we talked about you want to build trust. I want to see your posting activity. That's what I'm going to do. So I was working with my reps to physically make sure they're doing posting activity, so they overcome the same objection that we just talked about. And I was trying to teach them, you know, you've got 209-ish characters before it says, you know, read more on your LinkedIn post. So I was trying to teach them how you want to leave them like a cliffhanger, like it's the end of a season. It's a season finale. Did he live? Did he die? He was shot. What happened? I don't know. I got to click read more. So it's the same thing. Your email subject line has to be a little bit that way, provocative, just like any kind of post you do. If you want to get engagement, because the algorithm works on dwell time. And part of that is making sure that you hook them the same way. So it's the same skill set. Once you master it, you can use it in both cases.
Nice. What about a call to action? What are your tips there?
So call to actions are, I mean, here's the thing, right? Even in the TTTT, the last one I used as an example of teach me, that's Josh's, right? Which is really that call to action. If you want to learn more, if you want me to teach you, then this is the next step, all right? So marketers refer that as a call to action, which is you've hooked them. Now what do I do? Do I buy? Where's my credit card? You know, that's the whole thing, right? Operators are standing by, order now. and then they say the number 42 times over and over again, so you know what to do. It's the same premise. You want to have a call to action. So if you've hooked them and baited them, you want to tell them what the next step is. That call to action could be very subtle. It could be just like, stay tuned. I'm going to be reaching out to you again. I just want to introduce myself. All right. So the call to action is just simply stay tuned. But now they know to expect you because you've told them. So they're not going to delete you because you're like, oh, it's Daryl again. Or it could be like I said, do you want a copy of Cynthia's presentation? All right. Or it could be like, we've got a great webinar coming up. So I'm introducing myself. I've triggered you the whole nine yards. Here's a great webinar coming up. You might want to check it out. It features kick-ass rock star A, B, and C people that you know and respect from your industry. It's always a call to action. You're always trying to move it on. Here's what you don't want to do. The call to action isn't hit this Calendly link to book 10 minutes in my calendar. All right. Because again, no one's going to do that. You're not adding value. Why? Because I just met you. You were probably a few touches into the cadence. I probably haven't clicked through it as your LinkedIn post yet. I just haven't deleted you yet. I'm probably not even responding. All right. You want to establish a bit of rapport first before you can get to that. It's kind of like a funny story. Friend of mine divorced after 20 years of marriage, and he's dating for the first time in that long. He's telling me about the world of dating. I'm oblivious. And he was like, Daryl, it's a whole playbook. It's a sequence. You go and you put your profile up there, like your LinkedIn profile with some bait, clickbait. And then if they like you, they send you a DM and they really like you. Then they move on to text messaging. And if that goes well, then you move on to the coffee and then so on and so forth. All right. This is the same thing. Your call to action is really kind of, you want to get them from that DM to the text messaging. It's a little more personal. And then eventually you want to get to that face-to-face meeting. So I know it's a stupid analogy, but people need to trust you. So your call to action has to respect boundaries and familiarity. And you can't come across as slimy, like you're trying to sell something because they're just a transaction to you.
Absolutely. And that's a great transition. I think you mentioned with the just dropping the Calendly link and expecting them to do the work. What are your best kind of tips and tricks for actually converting the meeting into the appointment, scheduling the appointment?
Okay. So you're going to love this one. We did a study with the Telfer School of Management. We interviewed 2,000 senior executives, and we said specifically on the Calendly link, we said, how do you want to have them reach out to you to engage? Now, here's 40% of them said, send me a Calendly link. You think that's pretty high, right? No. Nay. The other 60% said basically either on a call with me or an email list, give me some specific times, or say, I'm available time A, B, C, and D. And if that doesn't work for you, here's the Calendly link. That's what they really want you to do. If you want that appointment, stop the love of God sending just the Calendly link. Because what you're saying to them is, my time is more important than your time. And you're also saying, there's a power dynamic at play here. You know, I'm more important than you. Book it on my calendar. You want to let them feel like they're in control. That's sales 101. All right. So to do that, you don't blindly send the link out. You say, here's times A, B, C, and D. If that doesn't work, then here's my link. Do that, and you'll have way more appointments set. Sounds stupid, but it's that simple.
Great. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for walking us through all the way back from the tops of the cadences, why they're important, how to actually build them all. And then of course, some great tips and tricks for the bulk of the messaging. And then the things like CTA, subject lines, scheduling appointments, all that kind of stuff. It was an absolute pleasure having you on the Predictable Revenue Podcast. If people want to learn more from you, if they want to get in touch with you, where can they do that?
A crazy thought here, LinkedIn or Google Daryl Prale. You can go to my website, lots of ways, but LinkedIn is the surefire hit.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much again for joining us. And thank you to all of you guys for joining us for another episode of the Predictable Revenue Podcast. If you haven't already, please hit that subscribe button on YouTube so that you can be notified each week when we have wonderful guests like Daryl Prale joining us to share all sorts of tips, tricks, and tactics. And I will be including in the show notes those couple of resources that we mentioned for you. I'll get the book details from Daryl and I'll show you the details for the Cynthia Barnes webinars. But thanks again for joining us and we'll catch you again next week.